Good morning. Welcome, everybody. It's great to see everybody here. I'd like to start by expressing our appreciation for the sponsor, that all the Shirim for 2024. Our sponsor, Le'ilu Nishmais Brana Bas Brandit and Zelig Ben Kalman, Aleihem HaShalom, should be an aliyah for their neshamas. And I'd like to ask you, if you don't mind, just to turn off your phones, turn them on to silent, so that we can have a shir without interruption. So just to remind you, next week is the last shir before Pesach. 2 weeks from today is Erev Pesach. So that we will be speaking next Monday, Be'ezrat Hashem, on a Pesach-related topic. But as I related to you last week, I couldn't resist today doing an eclipse special. Now, I appreciate that we're not going to be seeing this eclipse in Israel. You can watch it, no doubt, on some kind of live feed as it happens all across America. But right as we speak now, the moon is shooting around its orbit around the Earth, as it constantly does at thousands of miles per hour. In around 10 hours from now, the shadow of the moon will move across the Earth, in this particular case, across 13 states in the United States, which is one of the reasons why so many people are excited about this eclipse. An estimated 31.6 million people live directly in the path of the eclipse, which, unlike the eclipse in 2017 in America, which you may have been there or seen that eclipse, that also crossed America, actually, in that case, from the northwest to the southeast, but didn't cross as many cities. This one will be crossing a lot of cities. And in some places, such as Texas, the eclipse will last over 4 minutes, which is quite a long time for an eclipse. They can go to around seven, but that's very rare. And the eclipse will move from the southwest of the states, from Mexico up through Texas. It'll go across the Midwest, up through Illinois, up to Ohio. Ohio will have a lot of good viewing opportunities. And since Cleveland will be in the direct eclipse, and it'll shoot off towards Montreal in Canada, and then out into the Atlantic Ocean, where it will disappear at sunset. Of course, the time between sunrise, as it were, and sunset, as the moon is shooting across the Earth at 1,300 miles an hour, is only a couple of hours. So it will arrive with the sunrise over the Pacific, and it will end with the sunset over the Atlantic. So the science, just very briefly, we need to talk about just for a second so that people understand it. Of course, the reality is, no matter what the science is and no matter where the moon is, if it's cloudy, then you're finished. You don't really see anything, which is why England never gets very excited about eclipses. I remember we had one in 1999, and that turned into be a bit of a damp squib. But never mind, that's how it is. But the science behind it, and we'll see, by the way, the weather is important. The Lubavitcher Rebbe weighs in on the issue of the weather. The science behind the eclipse is very straightforward. The moon orbits around the Earth and the moon together orbit around the sun. Every month, or more accurately, 29.53 days, the moon goes around the Earth. And of course, at the precise moment where the moon comes back again to its starting point in the same alignment, as it were, of the sun, that is what you and I call Rosh Chodesh. And that is why an eclipse happens always on or just before the Hebrew Rosh Chodesh, which of course this year also for the Muslims is at the Ramadan, end of Ramadan, so they're all very excitedly trying to work out when Rosh Chodesh is as well. They, of course, still do it by sighting the moon, so they don't know exactly when the new moon month begins until they've had their testimony, etc. That's also why a lunar eclipse, when the Earth obscures the light from the moon and the Earth's shadow, if you like, is cast onto the moon, that will always occur on or around the middle of the Hebrew month, the 14th or the 15th of the month, again, when they're in alignment in the other direction. Now, you may ask yourself, well, why do we have an eclipse every single month? Because every single month, the moon moves in front of the sun as it goes around the Earth. And the answer to that question is simple, and I brought you a little diagram here, that the moon is actually tilted. There's a 5-degree tilt of the moon's orbit around the Earth relative to the sun's or Earth's orbit around the sun, which means that almost every month, the moon misses that direct line. It's either, if you like, relative to us above the sun or relative to us below the sun, depending on where it is in the cycle. But every now and then, because it's only a 5-degree angle, which is not that much, if it was like a 20-degree angle, eclipse would be very rare. Because it's only 5 degrees, every now and then an eclipse happens. And actually, they're more common than you think. In most calendar years, there are at least two lunar eclipses, sometimes even more. Solar eclipses can be 2 to 5 times a year. 5 is pretty rare. But the reality is, of course, because most of the Earth is covered by water and most of the land is not populated, they rarely occur exactly where you want them, just when you want them. In fact, it's only likely that an eclipse will happen where you live once roughly every 375 years. So people get very excited when they happen. Why, you may ask yourself, does the eclipse not exactly coincide with Rosh Chodesh? And that is because we calculate Rosh Chodesh according to something called the halachic molad. The molad is literally the birth, is the moment of conjunction of the moon with the earth and the sun. And we calculate that actually on the basis of the average length of a month, which is 29 days, 12 hours, and 773 chalokim. We divide the hour into 1,080, and therefore it comes out in that way. And therefore our Rosh Chodesh is calculated by a very interesting calculation. You go back to the year one, okay, from of 6,000 years. I'm not getting into discussion about creation and how old the universe is. We've had Shirim on that before. You go back to the year one, and the creation of the earth, in Hebrew calendar terms, the 6 days of creation, is at the end of year one, not at the beginning of year one. The Rosh Hashanah, on which Adam HaRishon was created, is Rosh Hashanah of year two. So we calculate back to this imaginary year one, which mostly didn't exist, and we go back to the very beginning, we count 29 days, 12 hours and 773 chalokim, and we add on each time. As it happens, this eclipse, this afternoon in around 12 hours, is almost exactly at the time of the halachic molad too, which is coincidental, but every now and then they really get spot on, and this month is pretty much that. Of course, the reason they don't work the eclipses, the Jewish month rather, based on the eclipses, is because for most of the planet, they have no clue when the eclipse is. And they only happen every now and then, so they need to have a halachically reliable system in order to work out the new moon. Okay, fine. Ad kan, it's been pretty simple. Lunar eclipses are far more common, and one of the reasons is the shadow is much bigger. If you think about the shadow of the moon on the earth compared to the shadow of the earth on the moon, lunar eclipses happen way more often because that shadow catches the moon more often, and they're visible from a much greater area. So many of you would have seen many lunar eclipses. I remember once in London, after Seder night, we all walked out into the street and looked up into the sky to a blood-red moon, because, of course, it happens usually on the 15th of the month. The reason, of course, that the moon often looks red, and more of that in the sources in a minute, is because effectively all the light shining onto the moon is going through the atmosphere of the Earth, and effectively every sunset on Earth is being projected onto the moon. And that's why it looks red. Sometimes it looks dark, brown, black. We'll see that too as well. And therefore, lunar eclipses happen far more often. If you want to wait for a lunar eclipse in Israel, you won't have long to wait. But if you want to wait for a solar eclipse, you might have to wait around a bit. The next solar eclipse happening in Israel is in 2027. That's not long, but it's only in 80%. The actual line of totality goes south of Israel over Luxor in Egypt. 80% is interesting if you're looking at the sun with your special glasses on. Obviously, everyone has to wear special glasses when they're looking at the sun. But it won't really change the light of day. Nothing really happens when an eclipse happens until 100% goes on. If you want to wait for a 100% total eclipse going over Yerushalayim, over the OU Israel Center, you will get one, Be'ezrat Hashem, on Sunday, August the 8th, 2241. Now, you may feel that that's not worth waiting for. That will be Rosh Chodesh Elul. And fascinatingly, that will be Rosh Chodesh Elul in the year 6001. Which is, as I just mentioned, this, if you're into the idea that the world will last 6,000 years, which is a Gemara in Makkos, and again, whether we take that literally as a midrash or not is not my discussion for now. But if you're interested in that and the world has 6,000 years, well, that next eclipse over Jerusalem will be exactly at the end of those 6,000 years. At the end of year 6001, because the creation happened at the end of year one. So if the evangelical Christians get excited about this eclipse, Wait to what they're going to say in 2241, when you hit the end of the 6,000 years. By the way, the last, in case you're upset that you missed one, the last total eclipse of Yerushalayim was on August the 20th, that was Rosh Chodesh Elul as well, 993. So it's been over 1,000 years since we had one, but only 200 years till the next one. So look on the bright side. Fine. The sources are actually fascinating, but before we get onto the sources, just one little last science point. The reason that a total eclipse is so spectacular is because the moon is exactly the same size relative to the Earth as the sun. Because even though the sun is 400 times broader in diameter than the moon, it is exactly 400 times further away. So the relative distance is exactly the same. And this wasn't always the case. Meaning if you go back to the time of the dinosaurs, then the moon was much closer to the Earth. The moon is spinning away, by the way, 4 centimeters further away every month. It's getting further and further away. So if you go back a few million years, the dinosaurs never experienced an eclipse like today because the moon just completely blotted out the sun. And if you go forward a couple of million years, the moon will already be too far away to do a proper total eclipse. It'll be smaller. It'll be more like what we call an annular eclipse. So we are very fortunate to be living at exactly the right million years or so that the moon and the sun are exactly in the right position. And this wasn't lost on the Torah or the Mephoshim. So if you ever want a reason to be happy to be alive right now, then that might do it for you. Let's start with some sources. Number one. So let's start at the very beginning. The creation of the sun and the moon. They're going to be lights. That's their primary function. Lahavdil, bein hayom uvein halayla, v'hayu le'otot. The first thing that the Chumash says that these lights up in the sky are for are signs. Signs of what? We'll see. Ulamoadim, and for the calendar, ulayamim, ulshanim, and to calculate the days, the months, the years, etc. Of course, a week is a completely non-astronomical calculation. It's just 7 days and doesn't fit into any of the others. So that's another shir, but not for now. V'hayu l'marot b'rikia, they will be lights up in the sky, rikia shamayim, l'ha'ir ala aretz, and we are most interested in how they light up the world, v'yihichein, and that's what it was. V'yas elokim et shnei ha'marot ha'gedolot. God made the two large lights. Et ha'mor ha'gadol, lememshelet hayom, the bigger light for the day, ve'et ma'or hakatan, and the smaller light, lememshelet halayla, ve'et hakochavim. And of course, there's a great deal of Torah as to why they're both called big, gedolim, and then the next phrase, one is called big and the other is called small. We will touch on one angle of that in a second. God placed them in the heavens. Again, the focus from our perspective is light. Now, if you look at the Ibn Ezra, go to page 3, and see the Ibn Ezra number 2. So the Ibn Ezra was an astronomer. The truth is most intelligent Sephardi Talmidei Chachamim back in the Golden Age of Spain, which is when the Ibn Ezra was born, had a broad training in grammar and literature and astronomy and science and mathematics and geometry, etc. But the Ibn Ezra, you had to pick the right yeshiva, that's the key. The Ibn Ezra was particularly known an astronomer as well, and there is even a crater on the moon named after the Ibn Ezra. It's called the Ibn Ezra Crater, funnily enough. So if you know where to look and you have the right kind of telescope, you can wave to the Ibn Ezra. I think he's somewhere near the Ralbag. I'm serious. The Ralbag has a crater on the moon as well. And no doubt they can have a chavrusa. Look at what the Ibn Ezra says. Number 2. The Chachmei HaMidot. Those people who are astronomers, who know to measure the Shamaim, say the following, Moedim they accept, Ki HaShemesh, Hi HaBriya HaGedola. The sun is bigger. Now you might say, well, that's obvious, but it's not actually that obvious because they do look the same size. How can you call the moon big as well if the sun is the big one? The answer is because we're only interested in the Tanakh insofar as our perspective of those celestial bodies in terms of how they shine on the earth. Therefore, we're not interested in the actual moon. We're interested in the light of the moon. And it only shines brightly because it's closer to us. In fact, there is a redact that says that they did a calculation and they reckon that the sun is 170 times bigger than the moon. Okay, so that's not far off. It's 400 times bigger. But they knew it was bigger, and we are talking about 1,000 years ago. So the Ibn Ezra again says, yes, two orbs in the sky, but one is much closer to the other, and that's why the other one, they seem the same size, etc. So they did have a pretty good understanding, and as we'll see in a minute, eclipses were something that had been predicted way, 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 way back. Okay, what about Tanakh? So one of the things you'll see, I brought you 7 or 8 psukim, from Tanakh that talk about the darkening of the sun, and 4 of them come from Amos. Let's just have a little sampling. Vaya b'yom ha'hu, says Amos, Na'um Hashem Elokim, v'heiti, heveti Hashemesh b'tzaraim, the sun will set, as it were, biat Hashemesh, the sun will go down in the noon, v'hachashachti la'aretz b'yom or, and the land will become dark in the middle of the day. Now, that very much sounds like an eclipse, that the sun will effectively set in the middle of the day, the land will come dark in the middle of the day, which raises some halakhic questions which we'll get to at the end, which is, so is an eclipse halakhically called a sunset? The halachas that only kick in when you hit sunset, which could have relevance for Hilchas Nida, or someone who's becoming tahor. Remember, how do you become tahor? From a regular tumah. You go to the mikveh, and you wait for the sunset. So is on an eclipse day, is a person tahor at 12 o'clock in the morning because the sunset? Interesting question, which I'm not going to dwell on, but something for you to ponder about. But Amos has another one here, number 4. Kine yodse harim, God creates the mountains of orei ruach, umagid la'adam masecho, he tells Adam his thoughts, oseh shachar eifa. God can turn the morning into the dark. So too in number 5, Amos says, v'yom laila hechshich, God makes the day dark like the night. So too in number 6, halochoshech yom Hashem, that day, the day of the Lord, will be a day that becomes dark. V'lo or, a day without light. Why is Amos so interested in the image of the eclipse? And of course, the imagery in Tanakh may not just be literal imagery of an eclipse, but the idea of the blocking of God's light at the end of days and this, the blurring of good and evil. There's all sorts of mashalim that you can bring from this, but why was Amos so interested in the image of the eclipse? And one reason might be that there was a major total eclipse when he was alive on June the 15th, 762 BCE, which is exactly the time of Amos as we understand it. There was a 90% partial eclipse in the Shomron, which must have made a major impression on the people there. And this is actually recorded in the Assyrian Chronicles. I brought you a link in case you're bored and can't sleep at night. You can read the Assyrian Chronicles from 762 BCE. And they also say there was an eclipse in the month of Simanu, which is Sivan. And this is quite possibly the eclipse that Amos saw that impacted him to the point that he wanted to talk about the eclipse so much in his Sefer. But not just Amos, Yeshayahu, I'm not going to read them all now. The Yeshayahu says the sun will be dark when it rises. Zechariah prophesies a day which is without sunlight and a night without moonlight. And Yoel, let's look at Yoel because this gives me makes me feel less guilty about not talking about Pesach. Look in number 9. The Natati Muftim Bashamayim. Uva aretz, I will make great signs in the heaven and the earth. Dam ve'esh ve'timarot ashan. Which of course makes you feel the Haggadah, because that's one of the things we say on the Haggadah when we dip the three little drops of wine after the 10 plagues. Dam, esh, and timarot ashan. V'hashemesh yafech lechoshech. The sun will become dark. V'hayareach ledam. And the moon will become red like blood. Clearly talking about an eclipse. That's exactly what happens to the moon when under eclipse. Lifno bo yom Hashem, before that great day of God comes. Yom Hashem hagadol v'hanora. So Rashi just mentions there that one of the reasons that the sun and the moon are being eclipsed is to embarrass those people who worship them. And we'll see this comes up. He's getting that from the Gemara. But before you just turn the page, I just want to mention a very important pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu number 10 says, Ko amar Hashem, El derech hagoyim al tilmadu. Do not follow, do not learn from the ways of the non-Jews. Umi oisas hashamayim al techatu. And do not be scared, do not be afraid, do not become apocalyptic when you see things happening in the sky. Ki yichatzu hagoyim heima. Because that's what the non-Jews are worried about. But why are you worried about that? Come on. Why are Jews going to be worried that there's an eclipse? And the Yirmiyahu says, don't be like everybody else. And by the way, so little has changed. If you look at all the chatter on the internet about the eclipse, the massive majority of it is evangelical Christian. People talking about there was an earthquake, and there was an eclipse, and. Okay, Jews are not so excited by those things. Because of Yirmiyahu, we have a slightly different perspective, which we'll see right now. Okay, let's have a look. Number 11, page 4. Eclipses in Chazal. So there is a major source. The one major place where Chazal discusses lunar and solar eclipses is in Sukkah. What is the context here? So remember, there's a Mishnah in Sukkah that says if it rains on Sukkahs in Israel, it's as if the servant gave water to his master and the master just threw it back in his face. So this, you'll see the connection with the mashal that the Gemara now gives about an eclipse. So there are four brises, four Tanaitic sources in Sukkah, each of which deals with eclipse. And I've numbered them 1, 2, 3, and 4 in number 11. So let's read these quite quickly. Tan Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, brisa number 1, Bisman shehachama loke, when the sun is afflicted. Now, what does that mean? What are they talking about? Now, most of us assume it's an eclipse, but we'll see that there's another view. Siman ra lachol ha'olam kula. That's a bad sign for the whole world. Moshel lema David Amar. What is this like? And here's the connection with Sukkah. Lemelech basav adam she'asa su'uda la'avadav. That the king decides to put on a party for all of the servants. Ve'heniach panas lifneim, and he gives them lights. He turns on the lights. Go and have a party. Enjoy yourselves. Kas aleihem. The party gets out of hand. The king gets upset with them. The omel avdo, and he says to one of his other servants, "Tul panas mipneihem, take away the lights. It's time for the party to be over. Vashivam b'choshech, turn off the lights. They're just misbehaving." End of brisa number 1. And of course, we're going to have to ask the question: in what way is an eclipse a siman ra? It's a natural event. It's predictable. It was by the time of the Gemara. The Babylonians, especially, were predicting eclipses, the cycle of eclipses, 1,000 years before the Gemara was even written in Babylon. So they knew, or they should have known, that it was a natural occurrence. So how could it be a siman ra? And what about Yirmiyahu, who just said, why you shouldn't be bothered about these things? The non-Jews are worried about these things. We'll see. That's brisa number 1. Brisa number 2, Tanya Rabbi Meir Omer. So Rabbi Meir says, appropriately illuminative name, Rabbi Meir, Kol zman sheha'ma'oros loikim, whenever there's, let's translate it as an eclipse of the sun or the moon, siman ra l'soneihem shel Yisrael. Now, soneihem shel Yisrael, the haters of the Jewish people, is a euphemism used by Chazal for the Jewish people. If there is an eclipse, it's bad for the Jews. Mipnei shemelumadim b'makoseihem, because they're used to getting attacked. Meaning, whenever anything bad happens in the world, the Jews get blamed. And the Gemara says this. Mashal, he's a mashal. L'sofer, to a teacher. Sheba l'beis ha'sefer, he comes to the school, v'ritzua b'yada, with a whip in his hand. Meaning, someone's going to get beaten today. Midoeg, which is the kid that's worried. Mishirachi l'ilkot b'chol yom v'yom. The kid that gets beaten every other day, because he's the kid that everyone takes it out on. Hu doeg. So the Jewish people should be worried there's a siman ra in Shamayim. Again, the questions we asked, we'll have to come back to. Brisa number 3. This is more detailed. Tan Rabban. Bizman shehacham aloka, when the sun is afflicted, siman ra la'ovdei kochavim. That's bad for the non-Jews, which usually ends up being bad for us too, by the way. Levana loka, when the levana is afflicted, siman ra l'soneihem shel Yisrael. That's specifically bad for the Jews. Bipnei sheYisrael monim l'levana. Because the Jews count their calendar by the moon, and the non-Jews by the sun. Again, I don't know where that leaves the Muslims, because they count it even more fanatically by the moon than we do. Not for now. Okay, so the Gemara says, look haba mizrach, if the sun is an eclipse in the east, when the sun is just rising, siman ra l'yoshvi mizrach, that's bad for the people who live in the east. But ma'arav, if it's in the west, when the sun's setting, siman ra l'yoshvi ma'arav. Be'em saraki, if it's in the middle of the day, siman ra l'kol ha'olam kolo, that's bad for everybody. Panav domel adam, and this is probably talking about the moon now. If the moon looks like red like blood, cherev bala olam, there's going to be a war. Lasak, if it looks dark brown, black, like a sack is really made from goat's hair. Chitzei rav bala olam, it's going to be famine in the world. Lazo, if it looks red and black, cherev v'chitzei rav bala olam, there's going to be war, God forbid, and famine, which often go together. Loka b'knisasoi, when if the maybe this is back to the sun again, it's not clear. Maybe it's the moon. Is afflicted, is eclipsed when it's coming up. Purinos shay levar. Then it'll be a while till the problems come. B'yitziyaso m'maherit levar. And if it's when it's setting, they'll come quickly. V'yeshomrim chiluf advarim. And some say the other way around. The ein lecha, lekol uma v'uma sheloika, she'ein eloheha loke ima. And whenever a nation is affected by the sun or the moon's eclipse, it's always focused on the gods. Here's another Mitzrayim connection. She'ne'emar v'chol elohei Mitzrayim eseh shvatim. I will also judge the gods of the Egyptian. Of course, the god of the Egyptian was overwhelmingly the sun. And of course, the sun god, which is called Ra to the Egyptians, also comes in wordplay when Paro is talking to Moshe. Remember when he sends him away and says, there's Ra, Ra will follow you. So of course, we translate that as evil. Evil will follow you into the desert. But of course, there's a play on words there, and he's talking about the sun god. The whole idea of the Ayin Hara, the evil eye, is deeply linked also with the eye of Horus and the Egyptians, that we had a whole shir on that as well, Baruch Hashem. So it says the gods are affected. Ubizman Shisrael, Oisin, return to Shil Makom. But when the Jews do tshuva, and there's the key, Ein Mityari Mikol Eli, you don't have to be worried with all of this. Shneimar brings a posuk in Yirmiyahu, which is don't be worried about the eclipse. Goy Michatu ve'ein Yisrael Yichatu. And finally, number four and number 11, Tan Rabbanu, Bishvil Arba Dvarim Chamalokan. There are four specific averas that relate to why the sun is eclipsed. And again, we have to kind of ask, what does this mean? Because the sun will be eclipsed naturally. Look at the four averas. Al-Av based in Shemait, a great Jewish leader that dies, ve'einu nisbad kahalocha, and is not properly eulogized. That's number one. Al-Nara murasa shitzaka be'ir, ve'ein moshiala, a young woman who is attacked, God forbid, and raped, and people don't run to her rescue. Va'al mishkav zachor, active homosexuality between men. Va'al shnei achim shenishbach damo ke'echad, and two brothers who were murdered together. Now again, what exactly these have got to do with the sun, we'll see in a second, or we won't see in a second. U'bishvil arba dvarim maros like him, and there are four reasons generally why the eclipses happen. Al kaisvei palastar, people who write forged documents, it's a Greek word. Va'al mi'ide edus sheker, and people who lie in court. Va'al migdalei behema daka ba'eretz Yisrael, people who are not careful with the land of Israel, looking after the land, and they breed small goats and sheep that just eat everything and destroy the land. Va'al kaitzisei ilanos tovus, and people who chop down good fruit trees and aren't bothered about the waste. Now, what on earth is going on here? Start for a second with number 13. Rashi looks at these different averas at the end of that of those prices. It says, because of these averas, etc. Rashi just says, Lo shamati tam badavar. I have no idea how any of these things connect with these four averas. And Rashi is very good at telling, Lo shamati. He said, I don't know, and I'm not going to guess. By the way, the Oruch Lener, Rav Yaakov Etlinger, who we're going to see in a minute, he has a good go at trying to explain how all of these things relate somehow to the sun. Some of them are more convincing than others, but if you want, you can go and look at that. But he wants to try and make the connection, but Rashi doesn't know. Yes?
It just hurts me to hear what you're saying.
Okay.
Because everything that happened to us 6 months ago.
Well, interesting. Meaning these are real things.
Exactly what happened.
That's very interesting. I hadn't made the connection, but you're absolutely right. These are real areas and that the society has to be focused on and that we need to correct, that we need to fight. And we'll see in a minute, that's actually one of the explanations that comes up, which is fascinating.
It's not here.
What's that?
The eclipse is not here.
Okay, fine. But let's not worry too much about trying to predict the past or predict the future. Okay, both of them are usually pretty frustrating. But Rashi does tell us one thing. On Chumash, which will be the famous Rashi that you will know, I'm sure, number 12, or you may have come across, number 12, says as follows, Shehat kamoiris lokin simon rahula olam, when the eclipses happen, this is bad for the world, and he brings the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, and he says, however, me oises ha-shamayim al techatu, you, the Jews, shouldn't be worried, but asoisecham ratzayin ha-kadosh baruch hu, when you do the will of Hashem, ein atem tzrichim lidog min ha-purunos. And the one message that Rashi wants to get across on Chumash is that the answer to all of these issues is not to be superstitious, is not to be apocalyptic, but is to look at the sky and do tshuva. And it may be exactly what you're saying, that Chazal are focusing us on certain specific areas and saying these are areas you should be thinking about when you are thinking about how what society needs to be fixed, how it needs to be fixed, and these are areas of tshuva. But that's what Rashi wants to know. However, I want to go into some interesting explanations which are given by later Mephoroshim as to how to make this all fit together. So go over to page number 5. I want to suggest three different approaches. The first one is the Oruch Lener. The Oruch Lener, we're not going to read all of these inside because there's a lot of words to read and we're not going to get through all of them. But the Oruch Lener says it's not like they didn't know that these were natural events. They did. Chazal did know. This was absolutely the science of the time. They explained eclipses. They predicted eclipses. What in fact they're saying, however, is that the Zman, the time of an eclipse, is an auspicious time for you to think about a certain religiously uplifting idea. Of course, there are natural events. But I brought you another connection that he doesn't make. But every natural event can be an auspicious time for us to think. Look at number 15. This is what I do want to show. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, ha'ose tfilasoi keva, if you make your prayer, your davening keva, fixed. It says that's not really prayer. The Mishnah says this. What does it mean, fixed prayer? My keva, what does it mean, fixed? What is bad about fixed prayer? Abar bar Avin, Reb Chananya bar Avin, Amri Travahu, they say the following. Someone who prays Shacharis and Mincha at the same time every day. That's fixed. Now, you might, this is not halachically, you know, it's not halachashir. There's no problem going to a Shacharis at 7:45 every morning. But there's something missing there. Why? Kol she'ein mitpalel im dimdumei chama, because you're not praying when the sun is red. Da amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, amar Rabbi Yochanan, mitzvah lehitpalel im dimdumei chama. It's a mitzvah to daven shachris as the sun is rising. And it's we call that netz. And it's a mitzvah to daven mincha as the sun is setting. Why? Because you look at these events, if you experience them and just take a few moments, they're incredibly impactful. Now, we take sunrise and sunset much more for granted than we take eclipses. But if, at the end of the day, one is no more miraculous than the other. And therefore, the idea of using a time of day to be inspired religiously, either to daven, to do tshuva, to focus on certain things, is very much baked into the way we see things. And the Aruch Lener even gives the example of the rainbow. What does God say about the rainbow? God says, after the flood, look at the last couple of lines of number 14. So if you look here, three lines from the bottom. Ke'ein mashi b'resh p'iresh ha-Ramban. This is similar, this idea of using the moment, is similar to what the Ramban says in Parshas Noach, ba'os ha-keshet, about the rainbow. She'al shehu davar al pi ha-teva. Even though the rainbow is natural, everybody knew the rainbow was natural. You can make your own rainbow. Just squirt a hose up towards the sun and make a beautiful rainbow. That's not new technology. Im kol zeh nitan harot herot inyan hateva. You can look at this natural thing la'ois tov to be a good sign. Shelo yavi hakadosh baruch hu mabul, that God won't bring another mabul. V'sha'al kein, therefore lo nema et kashti eten ba'anam. God doesn't say I'm going to create a rainbow and from now on that's going to be the sign I'm not going to create the world and not to destroy the world. Ela natati ba'anam. God says to Noah, I have already put a rainbow in the world. Up until now, it didn't have any religious significance, but now it does. Look at the rainbow. Look at the different colors. Think about the fact that the world has to, all the different kinds of people in the world have to survive and they have to get along together and the world has to continue. Now a rainbow is a moment of inspiration and taka, we make a bracha on a rainbow. Whether we make a bracha on an eclipse, you'll see in a minute. Okay? So the Rav Eklinger says basically, it's not that it's an auspicious sign, but it's an auspicious time. And focus, and as we heard just now, on certain averas. Now Rav Yonason Eibeschutz has a very interesting perspective. He's also coming from the question. He was living in the 1700s, and he said everybody knows these are natural. And by the way, by the 1700s, with Edmund Halley in England, after whom Halley's Comet is named, he was very specific in the way he could actually predict exactly where, exactly when, which areas of land, etc. So Rabbi Yonason Eibeschutz says, how does this fit together? So he makes an interesting observation. He says, what does it mean that the chama is loka, is afflicted? He says, I don't think that's an eclipse. Because in an eclipse, Nothing happens to the sun. We just can't see it anymore. Something moves in front of it. So how can you describe that as the sun being in some way afflicted or damaged? He says, I'll tell you what likui chama is. It's sunspots. Little black spots on the sun. And that's actually an affliction of the sun. The sun, if you like, has tzaras or something. There are little black spots on the sun. And that's what Chazal were talking about. And since they're not predictable, now they are more predictable, but since they're not predictable, when you see sunspots, that's what Chazal's talking about. Something weird's happening to the sun. The sun's got blotches, and that's when you have to do tshuva. But not an eclipse. Eclipse is like bubba mices. It's nothing to do with an eclipse. Now, that's a very inventive idea. There's a few problems with that. Number one, sunspots are very difficult to see without a telescope. By the time of Rabbi Yonis and Eibeschutz, they had a telescope, although they're not impossible. And I brought you an article by Jeremy Brown, Dr. Jeremy Brown. You may know Jeremy and Erica Brown from Silver Spring, both very eminent in their own fields. But Jeremy wrote an article a few years ago about the solar eclipse in 2017, and he goes into all of this, and he brings evidence from the Chinese that were looking at sunspots. And by the way, they could have made a pinhole camera. One of the ways that you can see the sun and what it looks like in an eclipse or sunspots is you can just project the image of the sun onto a card. And they did that in the ancient world. The technology of a pinhole camera dates back to 500, so BCE. Okay? So I don't think they were all like the Flintstones running around living in caves. They were. So he suggests it's sunspots. There are some problems with that. One of the biggest problems of his approach is there's no difference in the light on Earth when there's a sunspot on the sun. Even an eclipse doesn't actually make a difference to the ambient light until it's like 90-95%. So sunspots doesn't make any difference to anything. So it's a bit difficult to say that, but that's what he says. Rabbi Yonis and Eibeschutz was a very inventive person. Between him and his colleague and combatteur, or whatever the word is, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, between them they came up with lots of very interesting ideas. Now, go over the page to page 6, source number 17. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, he also comes on. Let's read what he says inside. Likui ha-morot, muvah b'kama makoma b'divrei Chazal. It's Chazal talk about eclipses. Uplia, it's plia. It's a very strange thing. Ki yadua she'afilu chachmei Mitzrayim v'lifnei ze Bavel. All the ancient astronomers in Egypt and in Babylonia. Source 17. Far archu luchos ha-likuyim. They already had eclipse calendars. This was ancient technology, ancient science. Ha'omrim, they tell them, v'yadua b'sifrei divrei hayomim. And it was also known from their chronicles, like I said before, the Assyrian chronicles. U'muvah lahavdil gam b'kitzvei HaKodesh. And it's also brought lahavdil in the Tanakh. They knew about eclipses. So in what way is this a sign if it's a natural event? And he says something that someone living in Crown Heights would be more likely to say. And he says, look at the underlinement. He says, ma'ad dvarim amurim, when is it a sign? When you're walking outside and you look in the sky and all of a sudden the sun goes black, that's when it's impactful. But if you live in North America, and certainly if you live in Northern Europe, almost every eclipse goes unnoticed because it's cloudy. And therefore, if you live in a place where it's cloudy, there's no negative sign from an eclipse because it didn't see anything. But if you live in a place where it's sunny, then that's when there's a negative sign from an eclipse. So that's a good point. So that won't work for a total eclipse. Because in a total eclipse, it doesn't matter where you're living and what the weather's like, it goes completely black. But it'll work for everything up to like 85-90%. If you're walking around on a cloudy day and there's a 90% eclipse, you hardly even notice it. In England, every day looks like a 90% eclipse, quite often. You know, in London, walking around there. So you don't even notice it. So that's an interesting idea by the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Three or four other ideas before we get into the halachic question of the brocha. So I brought you number 18. A lot of this is for your reading later on. The Maharam Shik. These are messages, not explanations, but messages to take out of an eclipse. The Maharam Shik says, look, an eclipse is a beautiful moshul. God shines a light of Shefa and Tova on the world. And what we often do is just block it with the way we act, the way we think, the way we interact with each other, and therefore and he brings a pasuk from Yeshayahu, Avonoseihim hayu mavdilim meinechem uvein elokeichem. It's your actions that cause this block between you and God, and therefore he says the whole concept of an eclipse is dafka, a marshal for the idea that God's light is still there, but you can't see it. And therefore we have to think, under what circumstances in our lives are we blocking out God's light? God is there when we let God in. And that's what the eclipse is saying. And Dafka, the sun, there's nothing happens to the sun. It's just that we can't see it. And that leads us to think, when are we blocking out the light and causing our own problems? That's a beautiful idea he brings. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, again in number 19, he brings an idea we mentioned before, that the whole point is not that the eclipse happens because of a sin. The eclipse is natural. But when the eclipse happens, we need to focus on certain sins, and maybe even that these are times which are more auspicious or negative, whatever the auspicious, negative word for auspicious is, for those kind of sins. And he gives his own explanation. But have a look for a second in number 20. This is a source that we don't often bring. Go to page 7. This is Rav Simcha Zissel, the Altar of Kelm. Look at what he says. Very interesting. He talks about an eclipse that happened in Europe in 1891. It says, "Gasina besuka, Tan Rabbana, bisman she'achama loika siman ra, ubisman she'alavana loika siman ra, v'hinei bekayetz havar." In last summer, he says, in the summer of 1890, Shnataf Resh Nun Aleph, 1891, but chalat hakayetz, at the beginning of the summer, it was actually June 6th in that year, Haya Likui Chama, there was a solar eclipse, which there was in Russia. Ba'einenu ra'inu, and we saw with our very eyes, ki achakach nilka ha'olam b'chitzei rav, that there was a terrible, terrible hunger, a terrible famine in Russia, which I mentioned in my notes here. In 1891-92, 500,000 people almost died of famine, and many of them, obviously, from the Jewish community in Russia. We saw there was this terrible famine. The achshav, and now, b'shavu ha'avara, in this last week after he's writing here, for our many sins, there was a likui levana, there was an eclipse of the moon, which, by the way, often happens when there's an eclipse of the sun, because the moon and the sun are in the same pattern there. The tilt is in the same place. And we should, as the Jewish people, be very concerned about this. Because the moon looked black and red, Gamba Yachad, together, and he brings from the Gemara that says, if it's red, that's a terrible sign for war, if it's black, it's a terrible sign for hunger, and if it's both, it's a terrible sign for both. Go to the second paragraph on the left. V'hine lo eit lehiradein. It is not a time to be asleep. Ki yesh lanu hatra'a gluya min ha-shamayim. Because we have, again, we're not worried and superstitious, but we have a clear indication from Shamayim. Al tikun ha-maisim, that there is tshuva that we need to do. Ve'ilu haya navi machriz ata, and if there was a navi that came to our town and told us, ki chas v'shalom puranus aysida lavoi la'olam, the bad things will come to the world, shuvu banim v'shav v'rapelo, do tshuva immediately, b'vadai haya pachad gadol, everybody would be worried. So kal v'chaymeh ben benoshel, kal v'chaymeh, all the more so, kishiha b'raitza, Machrezis Beferish, as the Chazal have told us exactly what this means. And we've seen the sign in the heavens. The Ashrei Labanim She'avihim She'bashamayim Odia Lahem. How lucky we are. He flips it. How fortunate we are that we get signs from Shamayim Lizaeh Min HaPurunos to tell us to improve ourselves, the Shavar Apelo, and to become better people. Let us look in our ways. Let us do tshuva. And he brings the brisa at the end. This is what Rashi says, if you remember. We don't have to be worried if we do the right thing. And Baruch Hashem, this will be great for us. So again, it's not that we look in the sky and predict an apocalypse. We look in the sky and we need to do tshuva. And the Orchas Sadikim, in number 21, actually says an even more beautiful idea, I think, which is as follows. Look what he says. Actually, we don't know who wrote the Orchas Sadikim. There's a rumor that it was a woman that wrote the Orchas Sadikim, but I cannot verify that rumor. It's an anonymous source from the Rishonim, but you can go and research that. It could have gone either way. It's more likely to have been a man, I would have thought. Hazir Mishalosh, he brings here in the Orchas Sadikim, She'yizkor tamid gdulasa shel hakel b'yisbarach. We should always remember how amazing this universe is and how great God is who made it. V'yavchim b'riyas o'ilam. And God made the universe in a certain way. We should understand it. Gudolim v'katin, the great things. Katanim, the small things. V'eich ha'galgalim holchim. V'hashemish v'ayreich kochavim. How the whole system works. Looking up at the cosmos. Yuridas ha'gashamim, the miracle of the rainfall. Nishivas ha'ruchais, the miracle of the wind. There are so many even countless things that we should be grateful for. But because we see every day the sun and the moon and the rain and the wind, we see that all the time. We're not surprised by it. We take it for granted. When the sun's eclipsed or the moon's eclipsed, as who tamam oid, it's astounding. Because it's far less common than the sun going round or the earth rotating. Therefore, look to the skies. Make an effort. Go find an eclipse. Get on a plane. Go to Greenland, wherever the next eclipse is going to be. And go and look in the skies. And pretend this is the first amazing thing you ever saw. Always be childlike. Why is this and why is that and how amazing is this? And you'll feel that you were blind until this moment. And now your eyes have been opened. And then learn to do this every day. Take the eclipse and then be like every day is an eclipse. This is not a rocket science. This is obvious. But it needs to be said. I reckon I've said this before, that one of the reasons that a lot of people are depressed these days is because they don't see enough sunrises. Because we get up, almost everyone gets up after sunrise. We only see the sun go down. We never see the sun come up. And if we just got up, like they used to do, back in the day they had no electric lights. Rich people could afford candles, but no one else. So when it got dark, they, you know, sat around and chatted for an hour or so, and then they just fell asleep. I mean, how long can you awake talking to your family in the dark? So they went to sleep at 8 o'clock at night. So of course they woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning for Nates. And they saw the sunrise. I think we'd all be different people if we saw the sunrise every single day. Even the birds get excited by the sunrise. And I'm absolutely convinced that they look in the direction of the sun. When you look at the birds sitting on the telegraph poles, in the morning they're looking at the sun. In the evening they're looking at the sun. I don't know what they're thinking, but they've got this Orchas Sadikim deep inside them. Okay, a couple more things and then a halachic issue to finish on. I brought you in 23 and 24 a piece, first of all, from Rav Elia Lopian that talked about a total solar eclipse over Europe just at the outbreak of World War I and how he felt that was a time of great horror for all the people of Europe. Exactly the time of that eclipse, hundreds of thousands of soldiers were being killed in the early battles of World War I. And I brought you also in 24 a Rav in Brooklyn who saw an eclipse in 1939, early in 1939, in April 1939, and gave a drosha saying that the eclipse is a harbinger of war and it's going to be a terrible war and a war like no one had seen before, and that tucker was the Second World War. You can read those accounts for yourself. Now, the question is, you're looking at the eclipse, either live or on TV. So should you make a bracha? Should you make a bracha on an eclipse? So let's just have a look at this briefly for the last 5 or 6 minutes. No, actually 10 minutes we've got left. Look at number 25. Says the Mishnah, al azikin, on shooting stars or comets, va'al hazva'ot, and on earthquakes, va'al habrakim, and on lightning, va'al ha-reimim, and on thunder, va'al ha-ruchas, and on hurricanes and tornadoes. Omer, you have to make a bracha. Baruch shekoicha u'gvrasa male olam. So the next time you're running to the tornado shelter, remember, this is a bracha you should be making. El ha-harim, on great mountains, va'al gva'ot, and on hills, va'al yamim, on seas, on narod, on rivers, va'al ha-midberot, on deserts. Omer, baruch oisim ha-sibreshis. You say, baruch oisim ha-sibreshis. I once made the bracha on the desert. I was flying over the Sahara Desert. I flew from Israel to South Africa, and you fly for hours over this unbelievable desert. I looked out of the plane, through the window, I didn't get out of the plane, and I said, Baruch Oisim HaSibreshis. And Nerem Yehuda says, Arei Sayam HaGadol, maybe there's a special one on the Mediterranean, or maybe the Atlantic, etc. Then on the rain, at the end, Alei Geshamim, V'al Bursuras Tairis, Omer Baruch Tova Ametiv, V'al Shmuas Ras, on God forbid bad news, you say, Baruch Dain HaEmet. So it didn't mention an eclipse. It didn't say if there was any bracha on an eclipse. It could have said. It didn't say one way or the other way. So the Achronim debate whether this list is exclusive. These are the things that you can make a bracha on and no other things. Or whether this list is a paradigm. This is anything that is unbelievable to you. You go to Niagara Falls. That wasn't on the list. You see the geysers. I don't know if that's how you pronounce them. Where geysers? I think English people might say geysers. What do we say? Geysers? No, I don't like geysers. Okay, fine. People will write emails to me. That's old geezers, okay? Not young geezers. Geysers, okay? Geysers. Do you make a bracha on this? What about on a volcano? Again, not from too close. My grandfather, Oliver Shalom, was in Italy in the Second World War fighting in the British Army when Mount Etna erupted with great display. Do you make a bracha on a volcano? It doesn't say. And nevertheless, many achronim do say that there are other things such as volcanoes and waterfalls and stalagmite caves that you can make a bracha on. Oseh maaseh brachos. So what about an eclipse? So pop over the page to number 9. So Page 9. So the Gemara actually asked a question, which I skipped, it's in number 26, which is why we don't make a bracha as the moon is waxing every month. Why don't we say, Hatova Hametiv, Baruch Hashem, the moon's getting bigger. And why don't we say, Baruch Dan Emes, as the moon's getting smaller? And the Gemara answers, because it happens every single month. Yeah? It happens all the time. Well, we're going to say a bracha, Baruch Dan Emes, every time the moon is going down. Okay, there are all sorts of minhagim. You shouldn't get married when the moon is waning, although you can. It's just like, you know, a minhag, whatever. So do you make a bracha? So the Abu Dharam in number 27, the Sefer Abu Dharam, quotes a Tosfos that we don't have anymore, but he had. And he quotes the Gemara there. Since the moon goes down every single month, we don't make this bracha. The Hikshua Tosfos, and Tosfos ask, again, we don't have that Tosfos, only preserved in the Abu Dharam. Im kein balakas hamorot, what about an eclipse? She'ein darcho bakach, which is very seldom, it's not like every month. Lama ein mevarachin dayan ha'emes. We should make a bracha, baruch dayan ha'emes, this is terrible. The Taritini answers, She'ein elevishisha, because it's a very temporary thing. We don't make a bracha on something this short, which is very interesting. The only bracha that they considered making on an eclipse was Baruch Dayan Emes, not Oseh Maaseh Brachos. So almost all of the Achronim, if not all of them, say no bracha on an eclipse. The Stipler I brought here in the English, no bracha on eclipse. Rav Vosner was quite permissive when it comes to making brochas. He made brochas on waterfalls in Switzerland. So they asked him, so if you make a brocha on a waterfall, will you make a brocha on an eclipse? So he said, I don't know, we need to think about it more. He didn't say no, he didn't say yes, he said we need to think about it more. Rav Chaim David Alevi, the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, formerly, he says no brocha on an eclipse because of the potential negativity that we've seen.
Potential?
Negativity. I mean, it's a time which is, maybe a bad time, we need to do tshuva to avoid the bad things. The Lubavitcher Rebbe also said, no bracha on an eclipse because of this reason. My wife was standing next to Dayan Chanuch Erentroy, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, at the 1999 eclipse, which they were watching together on a screen. I have no idea why she was with Dayan Erentroy watching the eclipse. I must ask her why. I think she must have had a meeting at the Beis Din. And she asked him, should we make a bracha? Oseh Maaseh Brachos said, no bracha. Okay? And of course, we generally have a principle, Suffolk brachas lahakel. When it comes to brachas, if in doubt, leave it out. That's what we say with brachas, so it's not surprising. Rabbi Michael Broyd has a tshuva where he says we definitely don't make a bracha, but he gives you some other ideas. Maybe say the bracha without Shema Malchus, Baruch Oseh Maaseh Brachos. Maybe say the bracha in Aramaic. It takes a little bit of prep in advance. Maybe say Ve'yavarach David, where it says Baruch Atah Hashem in the Psukim, and then add Oseh Maaseh Brachos. Maybe recite Tehillim. Rabbi Lau, the chief rabbi, says you should recite Tehillim 19 and 104. Rav Melamed, Rav Eliez Melamed in Pnini Halacha, he's the only one that says, that I can find, if you really feel a sense of awe and wonder when you watch the eclipse, then it's permitted to say Oseh Maaseh Brachos. Which actually opens up an interesting question, which is a much bigger meta-halachic question, which is our inclination that we want to make more brachas because of the sense of ahava to Hashem, or that we want to make less brachas because of the sense of yira, that God forbid I don't want to say shame Hashem for no reason. And of course it's a balance. In our yeshuv, in Alon Shvut, we have a very interesting paradigm, because we have Rav Yoel bin Nun, who is very into the ahava angle on brachot. He's the one that's going to say she'achiyanu v'kiyumanu with a bracha when he hasn't seen you for 30 days. He's the one that's going to make a tova amitim. And Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, who of course is a brisker, certainly at heart, who is very not into making extra brachot. And I remember just before the end of Obama's tenure, when there was a risk that there was going to be a vote at the Security Council which was going to go against Israel, and there was a point at which it was blocked. Eventually, it did happen. Rav Yoel Ben Nun stood up in our shul on Friday night. The Rav was away. Maybe the Rav went away on purpose, but the Rav was away, and Rav Yoel Ben Nun stood up and said, "I'm going to make a brocha hatoiv v'hametiv that we avoided a Security Council resolution." And he stood up on the front of the shul and said, "Baruch Ata Hashem, with a shame Hashem." And Rav Moshe Lichtenstein couldn't hold himself back. He screamed out in shul, "No!" Like on Friday. Everyone was like, like the clash of the titans. And then afterwards in shul, there was Rav Yoel and Rav Moshe Lichtenstein arguing it out. It was an unmissable experience. I only wish we could have filmed it. So Rav Melamed says maybe there's a tzad to say that. A few other halachic questions just to leave you with. Are you allowed to publicize an eclipse? Because the Chofetz Chaim says you're not allowed to publicize a rainbow because it's lashon hara against a world that needs a promise from Hashem. I was going to destroy you, but I'm not going to. So we can't publicize a rainbow, but you can publicize an eclipse. There's a minhag not to get married on a day of a lunar eclipse. So in case you're planning a wedding for family, the Mishnah Berurah on page 10 writes that there's a minhag to fast on the day of a lunar eclipse. And then finally, there's an interesting question of Kiddush Levana. We calculate Kiddush Levana from the halachic molad. You have half a month from the halachic molad to say Kiddush Levana. But we don't know the exact molad usually, and the halachic molad isn't the astronomical molad. But on a month where there's a solar eclipse and a lunar eclipse, we do know. That minute when the sun goes over your head, the moon goes in front of the sun, that's the molad. So do we take that into account for Kiddush Levana, yes or no? You can look into that yourselves. And finally, I brought you a little few sources there. I brought you at the very end in the appendix. There was a beautiful account. The Chofetz Chaim, at the very end of his life, in 1929, there was an eclipse near Radin. And there was an account written up of how the Chofetz Chaim got the guys in the yeshiva out of the yeshiva to watch the eclipse. What he told them about the eclipse, how they watched the eclipse. They didn't have the special glasses you buy on, from Walmart. They had like little bits of glass, dark glass that they held up to their eyes. Except the Chofetz Chaim, there's someone had bought him a pair of proper eclipse glasses, and there's a whole account there of how he wore them. It's actually a beautiful, beautiful account, which was translated into English, and you can read that in your own time, what the Chofetz Chaim took out from the eclipse. He was very inspired by the eclipse, and he wanted to inspire his Talmidim. So, there you are. That gives you a little bit of... it's not too late to book a ticket to America, but you might not get there for 4 o'clock this afternoon. Okay, so please God, if we all meet up in a couple of hundred years for the eclipse here, then we'll know what we're doing. Okay, next week, Pesach, I promise you, Bli Neder, and we'll talk about other things.